Choose bliss, the power and practice of joy and contentment. Monica Sawyer joins us, and we're going to talk about that. What makes people happy? What makes people sad? We're going to talk about all of it next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast. We're going to talk about something that's important to so many people. It's called bliss, happiness. What do we do to find joy in your life? Monica Sawyer with us. She wrote the book, Chose Bliss. She is a whole life mastery coach, author, of course, of Choose Bliss, the power and practice of joy and contentment. She's been described as one of the most joyful people you'll ever meet, and we will find out. Hello, Monica. How are you?
I am great. Hello, George.
And just so everybody knows, we're not mispronouncing your name. That's your first name, right?
Is my first name. It's Monica.
Monica. Was it ever just Monica and you changed it or what?
No, you know, I'm Indian. And so Monica is the Indian pronunciation of the name. So actually, officially, it is spelled Monica, but it's pronounced Monica.
Are you always this happy?
I am.
Oh, come on.
That's not totally true. I mean, everybody has bad days.
We're humans. That's right.
Yeah, but this is kind of my, let's say this is my default. This is where I come back to most of the time.
How did you get involved in trying to help people out of their funk and get them happier?
Wow, that's a great question. You know, that's kind of a long story.
You're on for 2 hours.
Okay, then I'll tell you.
I need you in the audience at my events. You'd be my, like, built-in laugher, and everybody else would start laughing at my jokes.
I really do love. This is one of the things I hope people really.
Hey, a guy walked into a bar. Well, we'll talk about that later. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I hope people get from this call how contagious laughter is. It's such a big piece of living in a world of bliss.
Well, you know what's funny that you bring that up? Because just a few weeks ago, I was talking to a doctor on the air about what makes the human body laugh. I mean, when you think about it, mm-hmm. It's this strange sound that's emanating from a person's mouth when they laugh, when they giggle. Everybody has a different laugh, different strokes for different folks. I mean, people laugh at different things, which is weird all by itself. But what is it about the human body that makes somebody just go, ha, 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 and start laughing?
And what did he say?
I'm asking you that because he didn't know.
Oh, he didn't know. That's so funny. I don't know. I don't know biologically what happens. But
isn't it weird when you think about it?
It is. And isn't it weird also that I can't think of any other animal that does that?
A hyena.
A hyena, you're right, but is it a laughter of joy?
I don't know. I've never interviewed a hyena.
Right? I don't know. Like, we feel joy in a very specific way as human beings. We have this experience, and then we express it in so many different ways. And this whole thing about laughter is a very human expression.
Why do some people laugh, though, at very bizarre things? And the little old man hits the curb, walking, falls on his face. I've seen people laugh.
Yeah.
I run over there and help the old guy, but some people laugh. I don't find anything funny about that, but they do.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, we've all got a different perspective, right? And I will say I'm kind of with you, is that if an old man falls, I'm not going to laugh at him. But we all do have a different perspective, right, on what is joyful, what's funny. You know, and you know, I think people do also use laughter as a cover-up for when they're uncomfortable, or when they feel helpless, or when they feel fear.
They're afraid, people, insecure.
Yeah, or you, like, you know, you see a man, an old man fall on his face, and you kind of giggle. That may just be fear that that's going to be me one day.
Huh, interesting.
Possibly. What do you think?
Maybe.
Maybe.
Or maybe they just have weird senses of humor.
Disposable too.
See, you're laughing. I just mentioned a guy falling and you're laughing.
Well, I'm laughing at your response to the weird sense of humor.
All right, so bliss. You call it bliss. What is bliss?
Okay, so let me tell you a little bit about how my path to
All right.
Finding bliss and then what that means for me, okay?
Go for it.
Okay. So when I was in the first grade, I was the only Indian person in my school. And because I was different, I was bullied horribly.
Really?
Yeah.
That's mean.
I remember once I went to a group of girls to ask them to play jump rope. And, you know, I kind of built up all this courage to go over and talk to them. And I remember I asked, and this one girl looked at me up and down in disgust and said, "We're not going to let Poop Face play jump rope with us, are we?"
Jeez.
And I was stunned.
How old were you?
I was in the first grade, so I was like six.
6 years old. Jeez.
And I realized in that moment that I was alone.
Did you cry?
I did. I did.
Poor little girl.
And, it was horrible. And it really set a standard for what I believed about other people, you know, and what I believed about myself. And I remember later, like in the fifth grade, one of the things I was really exceptional at was dodgeball, because I was little and I was fast, and, you know what I mean? And so I was always like the last person in the middle of the circle.
Were you good at throwing the ball or dodging the ball?
Dodging the ball.
Okay.
I was like really good, right?
Yeah.
And so there was one day in PE we were playing dodgeball, and I was running around the circle. I was the only person left in the middle, of course. And all of a sudden, the kids started chanting, get her, take her down, take down Poop Face, get Poop Face. And it was a reminder again that I was different and I was going to be alone.
How different could you be?
Well, I just looked different, right? And I think, you know, because of the bullying, I had a very low self-esteem. I was a pretty depressed kid. I was really unhappy. And I think that kids, they don't mean it, but they definitely sort of react to what they see, right?
Yeah, and some of them, you know, pick up traits of their parents.
Right.
You know, maybe their parents were that way or racists.
Right.
And you know, the kid hears it and picks it up and they did what they did to you.
Or they follow along with the other kids because they're too afraid not to.
Right.
You know? Anyway, so
the herd mentality.
I'm sorry?
The herd mentality.
Exactly. So it was a reminder that I was alone and that I needed to be strong and strong alone. So it was sort of me against the world. And as I got older, I really didn't want it to be me against the world. I really wanted to have friends. I was tired of being alone. I was tired of being sad. And then when I was 16, my mom went into medical school. And so she sent me to India to live with my uncle in Pune.
To India?
In India, yeah. And when I was there, it was a really fascinating thing because I was really cool in India because I was American. And I was considered really beautiful also, which was so different than what I had experienced here in
right.
the United States.
Sure.
Right? And so I was like elated and excited, and it was so cool to have people looking at me like they were kind of interested in me and, you know, and just thinking I was really cool. And I remember one day I was in a street market walking down the street, and I was actually singing Born in the USA. Do you remember that song?
I sure do.
Yeah, I was like singing it at the top of my lungs, and I was having a really good time. And then I saw in one of the books, the little book carts, there was a guy selling English books, and I saw three books that I had to have. And they were personal development books. And they promised that life would get better, right, if I read these books. So I scooped them up, and my uncle was coming, and so I, like, shoved them into my coat and threw my money at the vendor and then went and joined my uncle so he didn't know what I had done, you know? And then when I got home that night after everybody went to sleep, I sort of pulled the covers over my head, and I pulled out my little flashlight, and I started to read these books. And one of them was The Power of Positive Thinking by Norman Vincent Peale.
Uh-huh. Great book.
Yeah.
One
and
of
the second
classics.
One was Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich.
A strong book.
Yes, and the third one was an Indian book about how to use your life force energy to attract anything you want in life.
I like that.
Yeah. So here I was, a 16-year-old girl with these three books, and I just, you know, pored over them and read them each like three times, and I was taking notes, and I felt transformed because I suddenly realized that I did not need to be the victim to other people's opinions and ideas, that I could change the way my life went based on my mind and how I thought. And soon it came time for me to go back to the United States.
And how long were you in India?
I was in India for a year.
All right, not bad.
Yeah, and then, so I came back to the United States, and I was entering into my junior year of high school, and I was scared, I must admit, because I just had this amazing experience, and I really wanted to bring it home with me, you know?
People treated you well and kindly and everything else.
Yeah.
And you've got your memory of coming back to the States, where all these kids did was they made fun of you and bullied you.
Right, right. Can you imagine how scary that is?
Oh, yeah, it's not fun.
Yeah. So, but I was determined. I was like, I had learned all this stuff, and I was going to make my world different, right? So I was determined. And so I remember that very first day walking down the halls in school, and there was someone, a girl walking towards me. And I just put on, like, my biggest smile and with all this enthusiasm said, "Hi, good morning." And this poor girl, like, she probably didn't know what hit her, right?
And some of them remembered you, right?
She didn't even know who I was, right? And but she kind of looks at me startled, and suddenly this beautiful smile spreads across her face. And, you know, and I was hooked because I realized in that moment that I could make other people around me happy just by being my happiest self.
Well, kill them with kindness.
Right. Kill them with kindness. That's exactly right. That was one of my mottos, actually. So this was now the way that I was going to live, right? I was going to change everything. And kids that had tormented me before were now asking me to be in their study group. And the coolest thing that happened was that I was nominated for student government by these peers who had bullied me just the year before.
Wow.
And they actually ran my campaign, and I won. I was vice president of my class.
Good for you.
Isn't that amazing?
Good for you. Why didn't you run for the presidency this time?
Because the president had to do a lot of work, and I had a lot of honors classes I wanted to get through. That's the truth.
Now, these same kids, did you see a marked difference in the way they treated you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, suddenly I was, not suddenly, I mean, it took a little while. But it was a complete turnaround from the year before when people didn't know who I was, or if they did, they bullied me.
Well, what changed? Did they change or did you change?
Oh, I changed. It was definitely me. And that, you know, that's the thing about bliss. And that's really the thing that I want everybody to take away from this phone call or from this show is that...
Well, you'll get the phone calls.
Yeah. We can't change other people. We can't change the world. We can't change what happens to us. And we can't always control what happens to us, right? But we can always control what we think and what we do. And we can always choose how we react in any given situation.
When I was in school, never got into a fight, got along with just about everybody. And, you know, it was just my personality. We had a bully in the school, Monica, who bullied everybody he could. Not me. I don't know why he stayed away from me. Mm-hmm. But he bullied kids left and right. And some of them were my friends. And nobody had the guts to stand up to this kid. And, you know, he'd bump into kids. He'd push them around. He'd threaten them. And, you know, he terrorized everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one day we're in swimming class in the school. The school had a swimming pool. And I noticed a weakness in this kid. He was petrified of water. And I mentioned this story a couple of years ago. He was petrified of water.
Mm-hmm.
So the bullies in the pool And nobody's around them except me. And, you know, everybody's at the other end of the pool and the instructor's doing his thing. And I look at him, and for some reason, I dunked him underwater. And I mean, and I held him underwater, and I'm counting because I'm saying to myself, I don't want to drown the kid. You know, I'm not going to kill the guy. But I'm counting to make sure he doesn't drown, right? Mm-hmm. And I figure he can hold his breath for 20 seconds. And then I let him up, and he's gasping and crying and everything else. And he's petrified. He's shaking in the water. He's so scared. And I said, if you bully one more person in this school, you're not coming up the next time. And he stopped. He stopped. He didn't become the world's greatest guy, but he stopped bullying people. And they'd come up to me and they'd say, what happened to this guy? How come he's not mean anymore? And I don't know what the lesson is there, but I scared the living daylights out of him, which was totally against what I do.
Yeah,
I never would have done that, but something just forced me to say, this kid has got to stop, and I'm going to be the one to stop him. And it did.
So George, you say you don't know what the lesson was in that one. What would you guess it was?
Well, I don't know if the lesson was for me or him, but he changed after that. His mm-hmm. personality changed, and you know, he didn't bully kids anymore. So that stopped. And in terms of me, I was always the same kid. I mean, I never had to use that kind of aggression and only used it once before. That was with him.
Isn't that interesting?
But again, the story is, much like yours, his personality changed mm-hmm. For the better, mm-hmm. and people reacted to that.
Yeah. You know, it is interesting. So that story is really, for me, it brings up two things. First of all, his personality changed, and then people change around him, which is really what I'm also saying is that when you change who you are, the world changes around you to meet you, right? And people
right.
can react differently to you. But what's also really interesting is the inspiration that came over you to do something that was completely out of your character as you describe yourself.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
I mean, I became the aggressor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I became maybe the defender. You mm-hmm. know, maybe I was one of those where, hey, you know what? You are the one attacking us, and now we're going to fight back.
Right.
It was one of those things.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I will be really, really honest. I have a mixed reaction to that because from my perspective, I don't believe in aggression. I believe in killing them with kindness. Right? But for you, that was the inspired action that you got and that you took. And
well,
that's normally how you are.
What I saw in him was a weakness because mm-hmm. when he was in the pool, shaking like a wet puppy, mm-hmm. he was nervous and afraid and, you know, he wouldn't go in water over his waist.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, where everybody else was swimming and, you know, it was swimming class.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that. Something in me just said, you know what? This kid is going to stop doing the mean things he's doing because he's petrified of the water and I know what to do to scare him.
Mm-hmm.
And I went for it.
Yeah.
You know what?
Really interesting. Interesting story, George.
Yeah. And I never would have done it otherwise.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never attacked anybody. I've never had gotten to a fight.
Mm-hmm.
I've always, you know, in high school, you know how we called them the frats and the greasers in those days.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you had the tough guys who were always had their hair slicked back and stuff like that. And then you'd have the college-looking kids with funny clothes. And you know, I got along with both of them.
Right.
I mean, I was right in the middle of it all. And, you know, the tough guys sometimes would sit down and have lunch with me, and the other guys would look and go, wow, well, how's that happening? But stay with us, Monica. We're going to come back and talk more about your work, Choose Bliss, and get into that. And then I want to ask you why so many people are unhappy these days. We'll be back. And welcome back to Coast Choose Bliss with Monica Sawyer. By the way, her website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com for you. It is corebblisslife.com, but we've got the link. It makes it real easy. Monica, I have sensed over the last year or so that more people are unhappy than I've ever sensed before. Are you picking that up too?
Sort of. The honest truth is I feel like there's more of a separation between the people that are feeling happier, the people that are feeling unhappy. It's really kind of an interesting paradigm because I think that there's more awareness of what it is that can make us happy. And the people that are unhappy are feeling more and more discontent and more victimized by what's going on in the world. And part of that just has to do with we have so much information, so we can see, we're really aware of what's going on around us. And our reactions, our natural reactions, are then amplified. So sort of our default of how we normally react are amplified because we've got access to so much. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm, sure does.
Yeah.
Sure does. Yet, I wonder if people make their own happiness. And by that I mean, you know, can you be happy with one car instead of two? With a nice apartment instead of a big house?
Uh-huh.
You know, things like that. Can you do that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's what I'm all about. So, you know, here's the thing. When I talk about bliss, I'm not really just talking about being happy. Because being happy for a lot of people really is circumstantial, right? It's whether I've got the bigger house, whether I've got the nice car, whether I've got the perfect boyfriend, girlfriend, wife, husband, children, cute dog, best clothes, you know, all of these things. The best job, best pay, right? Those things are external material things that we rest our happiness on or what we think are going to make us happy. And what people realize and are realizing more and more, and I think this is a big piece of the discontent, is that we're realizing that it doesn't make us happy. That you can work your entire life and do all the right things and get all the right things and still not be happy. And why is that? Right? Really, why is that? And the reason is because, like you say, George, we make our own happiness. Happiness is an inside job. And that inside job is what I'm defining as bliss.
I mean, some people with incredible amounts of money are some of the most unhappiest people out there today.
I know. Have you seen, like, how many reports are there on the news about a movie star who's, like, got the, you know, $50 million home, the gorgeous husband, or, you know, all this stuff, the jewelry and the clothes and the Emmys or the Oscars or whatever, and they do a drug overdose or try to commit suicide.
Right, or the cops show up because they're abusive or something happens.
Right? So
just go to TMZ. You'll see it all the time.
Right? So it just goes to show you that, you know, all of those things, they can support and amplify your happiness if you're already happy.
Now, it's some people, though, and we've talked to our resident psychiatrist, Dr. Peter Breggin, about this.
Mm-hmm.
Some people around the holidays get depressed. I did something. I'm coming up on my 14th year of doing this program.
Uh-huh.
And when I came in to do this, the one pledge I made to everybody was that we would always have live shows on holidays because, one, there are a lot of people who like listening to the radio during holidays, mm-hmm. but, two, there are a lot of lonely people out there. And this radio show is their connection. It's their relationship.
Right.
And I made a pledge to them that I don't care, you know, whether it's me or my weekend hosts, we will have a live show on the holidays. And we've done this now for 14 years. I've worked Thanksgiving and Christmas and New Year's and every holiday that comes. Now, in this particular season, the holidays are falling on weekends. I've got my backup people there. I've already told them if they're not going to be on, I will. And I'm going to be on New Year's night. So, I mean, we have live programs. But the bottom line here, Monica, is that there are a lot of people during the holiday season who get a little down, a little depressed. But why?
Why? There's a couple of reasons. First of all, I want to, you touched on a really, really key point, George.
Mm-hmm.
You are committed to the service of your people.
Yes.
Right?
110%.
Right. And how does that make you feel?
It makes me feel pretty darn good.
Right?
You know, I care about them.
Right? You care about them. You're outside of your own head. You're thinking about somebody else. And you're doing what you say you're going to do. You're walking your talk.
I mean, my family, they're in St. Louis, and, you know, I broadcast out of L.A., but I come back for the holidays and things like that. I mean, they know, for example, on Thanksgiving, they know at a certain time, Dad's got to go to the studio and get ready to do the show. He's, and I mean, they've accepted that, you know, they encourage it now as much as I do. But it makes me feel good when we go on the air and I get that call from a listener. It just need, you just need one who just said, you know what, thank you. This was so important for me. And we made their holiday. We made it special for them. They were interactive. They had the ability to pick up the telephone and go on the air and talk to a guest or to me. And, you know, that's what we do. And, I mean, we feel pretty good about that.
Right. And so part of what happens to people is during the holidays, they have all these expectations, and it's either set up by their own beliefs or by commercials or whatever, right? There's all these expectations of what the holidays are supposed to look like, and they get depressed because it doesn't look like that for them.
It doesn't happen that way.
It doesn't happen that way. So there's all these expectations, right? So they're in their head about what's not happening. Now, what if instead they did a George? And they decided that instead of being all about me and what's not happening and what's not working, they went out and did something of service. What if they went out and on Christmas Eve, they served the homeless people in a shelter?
Right.
What if they went out and they went to the poor neighborhoods and delivered turkeys for dinner?
Mm-hmm.
So this is the thing. Part of why we get so happy, and this is true during life, just every day, but it's more true during the holidays because of the level of expectations that's set by us, is that we get so caught up in our head about what's not happening and what's not going right, rather than looking at what is right. Like, I have food, that's awesome, and getting out of your head and being of service to other people that are even less fortunate than you. And that does two things for you. First of all, it helps you to realize how lucky you are. But second of all, oh my God, it feels so good to be of service and for you to get that phone call. But imagine if you're serving food to people, to children that don't have food. What would it make you feel like to see the look in their eyes when they get a full meal?
So let's talk about the person who can't have bliss.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason,
mm-hmm.
they just can't get happy.
Mm-hmm.
And we may get some of those calls tonight. I don't know. I'm going to ask for all kinds. But what if they just can't be happy? Why? What's wrong?
Okay, so this is not going to sound very compassionate. And forgive me for anybody who's listening. But there's no such thing as not being able to find bliss. It just doesn't exist. Bliss is our birthright. We are born as blissful, beautiful beings. We come into the world that way. And life teaches us not to be blissful. And if life has taught you to not be blissful, it just means that you're holding on to those feelings. You're not learning your lessons. And you're not willing to do what it takes to get back to that blissful place. Because the reality is, we can all get there. It's a choice. It really is. We have control. We have that control, and many of us don't believe it. Many of us can't see it, but it's there. It's there for all of us, every single one of us. There's nobody that can't have it. There's only people that can't see the way or aren't willing to take the action.
So do you think people who are not blissful, unhappy, are doing it to themselves?
I don't want to say that they're doing it to themselves. But what I do want to say is they do have control over pulling themselves out of it. I'm not saying that's going to be easy.
Well, what if you're terminal? You're dying of some disease. How can you be happy about that?
If you're terminal and you're dying of some disease, you can be happy about the fact that you had a life and what it was that you got to share with the people that you love and the experiences that you got to have. And sure, it's ending early.
So even if you were dealt the wrong deck, let's say,
mm-hmm.
in life,
right,
be happy that you at least have something, had something?
That you had it. And remember,
it's not easy.
Beautiful about it. I mean, that's the truth, right, is remember what was beautiful. Don't spend those last days or weeks or months being afraid of dying and upset and, you know, and angry and bitter. Instead, why not spend that time being so grateful and joyous for what you've got to experience?
See, I have kind of a weird outlook on life,
mm-hmm.
and that is, look at every day as if it's your last one.
Mm-hmm.
And because you never know what's going to happen tomorrow.
You don't.
I mean,
you really don't.
You see so many stories of people who have died suddenly, of accidents, of tragedies. You don't know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so why waste today by being bitter and unhappy? Yes, we're human. Again, you know, we all go through stress and stuff like that. That happens.
Mm-hmm.
But I really think if people would look at, you know, this day as their last day, their outlook on life would be different.
So different. Yeah. And I have to confess, George, I have a very similar outlook that every day is a gift because we don't know if we're going to get it tomorrow.
So how do you help people, though, get into that state?
Into that state?
Uh-huh. That state of, I'm going to live today like this is it. I'm going to have a great time.
Mm-hmm. Really, it's just believing that. So what I tell people is when you wake up every single morning, the very first thing that I like people to do, and I've taught every single one of my clients this, and it is completely, it's so simple and it's so completely transformational, is to say something that you're grateful for, even before you open your eyes. And for me, the thing that I'm grateful for, like sometimes it's hard to think about it, right? So I will ask people to say three, but the very first one is, I am so grateful for this new day that I get to experience. Like, it's so simple. But if you really recognize that, if you really get that each day is a gift and you're grateful for it, you will live in that space, that this day is a gift.
How can you avoid people who bring you down, people who have clouds over their head, people who are really just downright unhappy and evil?
Mm-hmm.
How can you just avoid them?
How can you? I mean, you can choose to avoid them, don't you think?
I would think so.
Yeah. So, I mean, you just don't have them in your life. Now, that's not always possible. We all have run-ins with people that are not, that are those things.
They may be in your life, and
yeah,
you can't get rid of them.
You can't get rid of them, right? Maybe they're family.
That's right.
Right.
You're stuck with them.
Right. If you're stuck with them, then it's really about making a decision inside of yourself that I am not going to allow this person to get me down and to affect me. And so when you're having a reaction, I actually have a little process that I go through because I do have people like that in my world also. We all do. Where, and it's basically stop, drop, and breathe. And so when I'm in the environment with somebody that is pushing my buttons or is just a downer or is mean and I'm noticing, I stop whatever that thought process is that I'm going through in that moment, because that thought process is making me unhappy, and I drop into my heart and I breathe and I relax and I get into a loving space, and then I can come back into wherever I am from a place of wisdom and compassion and act accordingly.
If somebody were to first meet you, mm-hmm. what would they say about you afterwards?
Me?
Yeah.
People always say to me, oh my God, I really, really wanted to meet you because I saw that smile and I just had to know who that person was.
I bet you give off an aura that people can feel.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. Absolutely, and we all do. We all do. We all have an aura. Mine is, I will say, it's a really joyful aura, and people want to be in it.
People want to be around you, don't they?
They do.
Have you seen psychic vampires where people are exhausted next to somebody who has the worst sucking energy out there?
Uh-huh.
They're out there.
They are out there. I know.
Some of them don't even know they do it to people.
Most of them don't even know. They don't, and most of them don't mean it, right? But they just are that way.
They're not bad people. They just have this aura about them, or maybe they don't even have an aura, where it's just that you're exhausted being around these people.
Yeah.
You want to get away from them.
Right.
They're
right.
There. They're there. There's a lot of them out there.
There's a lot of them out there.
How does a psychic vampire change his or her life to become a little more magnetic?
Like I said, it's all about your mindset. It really is. It's about deciding, I don't want to be that person, and what can I do to change it? And you know what? It doesn't happen overnight. I'm not saying this is easy, and it's not going to happen overnight. But if once you become aware of what it is that you want in your life, now you have a goal to pursue. So if you feel like, you know, there's a lot of people now, this whole psychic vampire or energy vampire concept is becoming more and more wide known. And so people will start to think, oh my gosh, am I that way? You know, why are people pulling away from me? Why doesn't anybody like me? When you start to have those thoughts, you can take responsibility for that. Okay, what is it that I can do that will make me more attractive to other people? But even more importantly, what is it that I can do that makes me happy so that as a happy person, I'm now just generally, basically, naturally attractive to other people?
See, my sense is if you walked in a room, said nothing to nobody, just walked in that room, people would still feel positiveness coming from you.
They do. That is true. Actually, I actually have run experiments on this one where I'll walk into a coffee shop, you know, and I'll just kind of observe what's going on and see, you know, there's a couple having a fight, right? Or there's a barista that's really grumpy, right? And then I can just walk in and sort of, like, in my way, sort of spread my happiness without even saying anything, just smiling or, you know, being there. And you see the whole room will change. You know, the couple's fight will stop. They'll lean over and kiss each other. The barista will be really nice to a customer, you know?
It's magical.
It is magical. And this is the thing about bliss. It's a way of being. It's a whole persona. It's not just that I'm happy all the time.
Well, let's talk about bliss next hour. We'll take phone calls, questions, or your story, your personal story, when we come right back.